Welcome to this bonus episode of information that became too much for us to squeeze into just one of our ongoing and a series of teleforums designed to keep pastors and religious leaders around the country updated on the very latest concerning the novel coronavirus and especially its impact on religious liberty. I'm Jeremy Dice, an attorney with First Liberty Institute.
And I'm Justin Butterfield, another attorney here at First Liberty Institute.
Well, Justin, a lot has happened since our last conversation last week. Those who joined us then may remember that you gave a very helpful analysis of how to think through the government's approach to curbing the effects of the coronavirus. And as you'll recall, the questions we received expressed mainly the same thing. How do churches do church when we can't gather together as a group?
Well, that's right, Jeremy. And if anyone missed that call, it's available on our website at firstliberty.org. And the bottom line is this: all of us are working to limit the impact of the coronavirus. And with a few exceptions, I've been generally pleased with the response of local government to this issue. But I have been especially pleased to see how the thousands of churches and religious bodies around the country have stopped and made adjustments, some of which were extremely creative ways of keeping community alive during this tough time.
Yeah, and as we've heard on our live call this week, there are a lot of good stories to report on, including the conversation we had with one of our clients in Nebraska. And if you missed our live call, be sure to check out episode 2, the recording of our second teleforum at firstliberty.org. But for this bonus episode, we want to borrow from the spaghetti westerns of old and evaluate the good, the bad, and the ugly of the executive orders we've seen thus far. In the last week, I think we have seen every state issue some sort of executive order on the topic. In addition, every major city has felt the need to issue its own guidelines or directives, and many, if not every, county has similar orders in place at this point. The list would probably number in the thousands if we actually went through all of them. But Justin, give us a sense of what you've seen so far. Let's start with the good. We may be a little biased here in Texas, but we thought Texas presented perhaps a decent model for balancing the interest of public health and religious liberty. Tell us what you like about Governor Abbott's order.
Thanks, Jeremy. So Texas has issued a series of orders that are tailored to maximize hospital capacity for those who come down with COVID-19 and limit exposure to those who are most likely to have COVID-19. So to increase hospital capacity, the governor ordered that non-essential medical surgeries and procedures be delayed for now so that hospital space, medical equipment, and protective gear is available for healthcare professionals who are dealing with a potential influx of COVID-19 patients. The governor also suspended certain state regulations so that if hospitals need to, they can treat more than one patient in a single hospital room. And finally, he created what he calls a strike force, which sounds a bit dramatic, but their job is to ensure that healthcare facilities around the state get the supplies that they need to provide help. So that's expanding hospital capacity. The other thing that Texas has done is to attempt to limit exposure from those most likely to have come into contact with the coronavirus, as well as exposure to those who are more likely to be seriously affected by the coronavirus. So, for example, travelers coming in from certain areas that are the hardest hit by the coronavirus have to self-quarantine for 14 days, either at home or in their hotel room, when they get to Texas. And the governor has also stopped visits to nursing homes and retirement facilities, except to provide critical care, so that those communities are less likely to be exposed to someone with the virus. And then finally, Texas has issued guidance recommending that everyone follow the CDC guidelines, such as by not gathering in groups of more than 10 people. So Texas has taken a series of targeted steps that are designed to minimize the greatest risks, people traveling from hot zones and people exposing the elderly, and provide the hospital capacity that is needed to fight this, while also providing the CDC's guidance for the rest of us, but without the temporary taking away of freedoms that a lot of states have.
Well, that's helpful, and it seems like Texas has instituted some rather common sense guidance and or restrictions for its people. By the way, just so that we have a programming note here, next Friday, April the 3rd, we're working to get Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to join our call, along with one or two perhaps local officials, to help us understand how state and local officials are working together to advance public health while also preserving religious liberty. Be sure to check firstliberty.org for more information on that as that becomes available. Oh, okay, so that's the good example, Justin, but we've seen some pretty bad examples too. In the state of Virginia, for instance, Governor Ralph Northam, he issued an executive order this past Monday that said that from March 24th until April 23rd, and I'm quoting, all public and private in-person gatherings of 10 or more individuals are prohibited, unquote. Well, now, Justin, that initially doesn't sound terribly concerning based on the information you provided last week. It seems to be trying to achieve a compelling interest of protecting public health, and it's temporary in nature. But why are we including it as an example of a bad executive order?
Yeah, Jeremy, so the problem with Virginia's executive order is in the details. As we explained last week, limiting gatherings to fewer than 10 persons may be permissible in certain circumstances. And much of Virginia's order is reasonable and fits within that framework that we discussed last week. But Virginia's executive order doesn't address religious organizations at all, which has created a lot of confusion in the state about what it means for churches. So last week we discussed how churches and religious organizations have to be treated as well as similarly situated secular organizations. Well, Virginia's executive order says that it bans, quote, all public and private in-person gatherings of 10 or more individuals, unquote, which is basically the CDC guidelines. But then it goes on to say, quote, business operations offering professional rather than retail services may remain open, unquote. And it goes on to completely exempt the operations of the media. And curiously, while professional services still have to follow the social distancing guidelines, the media, which is undefined, apparently are exempt from that too. So what does that mean for churches? Well, it's hard to say. The governor did issue a frequently asked questions document that claims that it applies to church services, but arguably the executive order would completely exempt something like a press conference from having to abide by its requirements, even its social distancing requirement, and it's hard to see what the fundamental distinction between a press conference and a church service would be. In both cases, you have potentially over 10 people sitting together listening to one person speak from a podium at the front. And is a church service a professional service? Quite frankly, I don't know. And the executive order doesn't give a definition. So just on a surface level, the executive order is vague at a time when we really need clarity. And I think that it has some serious problems under the First Amendment because it doesn't treat churches the same as what would seem to be similarly situated secular functions.
Well, I guess that makes more sense then as to why we would put that in the category of a bad executive order. Well, hopefully somebody in the state of Virginia will alter its behavior quickly before it harms the legitimate claims of religious liberty within that state. But sadly, that's not the worst of the orders we've seen. The way you described to me the executive order in operation in the state of Illinois, well, it's almost unbelievable. Why have we saved this as the ugly for the last?
Well, Jeremy, I guess if we didn't save the ugly for last, you wouldn't be able to make spaghetti Western jokes.
Well, fair enough.
So Illinois has issued a statewide stay-at-home order, which is quite a bit more stringent than what the CDC guidelines recommend. And these types of orders should be looked at much more critically than orders following the CDC guidelines. But then Illinois' order makes a series of exceptions, a lot of them, in fact, including things like going grocery shopping, going to visit your lawyer, going to visit your title company, going to grow cannabis.
What? Marijuana?
Yeah, it's right there in paragraph B of Essential Businesses and Operations, which is titled Food, Beverage, and Cannabis Production in Agriculture. I mean, you have to have the staples, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, right. Eggs, toilet paper, marijuana, you know.
Exactly. But you know what's not included? Going to visit your pastor. Or a skeleton church staff going into church for the purposes of streaming a worship service.
What, now, is that because, like Virginia, Illinois doesn't address churches at all, so we have to infer from what it does permit?
No. In fact, religious organizations are mentioned. Actually, immediately after cannabis, we see that religious organizations are exempt, quote, when providing food, shelter, and social services and other necessities of life for economically disadvantaged or otherwise needy individuals, individuals who need assistance as a result of this emergency, and people with disabilities, unquote. So they at least permit that. But that's the only exemption that religious organizations have. Travel by the pastor, a sound engineer, and an IT person at a church to stream a service for the congregation? Not permitted. Maybe if they prune a cannabis plant while they're there. Now, as with Virginia, there are several permitted actions that are similarly situated to a small staff going into church for the purpose of streaming a worship service, but the executive order itself really needs to change.
Well, that is very ugly. So ugly, in fact, we may need to send a letter to the governor, which folks will be able to read once we do, at firstliberty.org. But while it may not fall in the category of the bad or the ugly, this past Monday, we sent a letter to the city of Gainesville, Florida. It seems that the city manager's order there prohibited the assembly of individuals for worship services, deeming them as, quote, non-essentials. But they did permit the assembly of such, quote, essential places of public assembly as stores, banks, and then private offices. It's that last part, Justin, that I think seems to be a bit too much.
That's right, Jeremy. Well, as our colleague Keisha Russell said in that letter, by prohibiting people from assembling for worship while allowing people to assemble in a long list of places the city considers essential, including private offices, the Gainesville executive order fails to apply the law evenly to all similarly situated assemblies without vague loopholes.
And it's those vague loopholes here that those are those private offices, right?
That's right. And it's similar to the orders that we just looked at that permit, you know, professional businesses to remain open, whatever that means.
Well, the good news is that after we sent them the letter, we received a phone call from the city manager who thanked us for writing to them. He noted that Gainesville is now operating under the county's emergency order. And how is that different?
Yeah, so Alachua County's order says that it does not limit religious services at any location, but all persons performing or attending religious services are recommended to comply with all measures advised by the CDC, including fewer than 10 meeting and by practicing social distancing. And that, I think, is much more clear and will result in more churches voluntarily complying than before.
Well, let's hope so. It seems that clarity is the rule of the day to make the most respect for both what's going on in the public health, but also for respecting religious liberty. And if you're listening from Gainesville, Florida, you can go to firstliberty.org and read our letter and learn more there as well. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps this first bonus episode of whatever we're calling this evolving program of ours. But be sure to tune in next Friday at noon Eastern time when we hope to talk again live with Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton about how his office has been navigating these important religious liberty concerns as Texas works to address the effects of COVID-19.
And make sure you check out firstliberty.org regularly, too. Not only are we posting more resources each week, you never know when we might just surprise you with a new call for you to join as we talk to experts, offer our own thoughts, and hopefully answer your questions.
Yes, and on that note, please do send us your questions. And the best way to do that is by just sending an email to askfli@firstliberty.org. That's askfli@firstliberty.org. We'll then read your question on the air if we have time and answer it live whenever we're able to.
And it might also help if you go to First Liberty Institute's Facebook page. Not only should you like that page, but you can leave your questions there too. And don't forget to tell us how your church is adjusting during this time.
But that's it for now. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jeremy Dice.
And I'm Justin Butterfield.
Have a safe weekend, and we look forward to talking with you again more next week.